Okay, so who's been enjoying our series on relationships? Yeah. Good stuff. So, to finish off today, because it's the last Sunday in February, we're going to be finishing off our series, talking about a number of things, and what me and Rachel are going to do today. Bit of tag team preaching. We'll see how it goes. But we've been talking about this whole month, this passage in 1 Corinthians 13 gets read out at weddings, gets read out everywhere. It is the passage in the Bible about love. So we've heard about love is patient, love is kind, love is all these incredible things. And we spoke about how love shouldn't be a checklist. This list in 1 Corinthians 13, it shouldn't be a checklist. It shouldn't be this unattainable standard that we try and live up to. But we can't in our own human strength. What we need to rather do is look at it and say, God, this is who you've intended me to be. Change my heart. Change my mind. Make me like that. I don't want to strive to try and tick things like a little to-do list. But I want to be love. I don't want to do love. I don't want to strive, but I want to be love. I heard Pastor Monica Collard put it this way. You know, when we read the Bible, when we read 1 Corinthians 13 about how love is patient, love is kind, love does not envy, love does not boast, how we're supposed to be all of these things, it's a standard, yes. But it's not a standard that we live up to and fall short. It's a standard that we need to live out of instead. We need to live out the fact that, yes, we're not always getting it right, but this is who we are. This is our identity. This is who God says we are. And I was reading the Beatitudes in Matthew's Gospel at the start of Jesus' most famous sermon, the Sermon on the Mount. And he reads these things. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the humble. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst for righteousness. All of these down and out people in society, these down and out people who do not have what it takes to succeed in a natural sense, who do not have what it takes to go on sometimes. Jesus is looking at those people and saying, you're blessed. You're to be envied. Congratulations. You've got it. Because when I look at the Beatitudes, again, it's not a standard that we live up to. We don't need to do these things in order to be right, in order to be perfect. But they're called the Beatitudes for a reason. They're the attitudes of being, not the attitudes of doing. We're human beings. We're not human doings. These Beatitudes, they're all about the heart. They're all about our character. They're not a checklist. And in this way, I want to introduce us to God's upside-down way of doing things. You might have heard that phrase before, God's upside-down kingdom. Because Jesus says some pretty scandalous things in the New Testament. He talks about how if you want to be the greatest, you need to be the lowest. If you want to be the master, you've got to be the servant. If you want to be the leader, you've got to learn how to follow. And God's way of doing this is completely upside down to our way of doing things. But this is who we've got to be. Again, this is who we need to be, not what we need to do in order to be. I really want to hammer this point home. We are human beings. These are the be attitudes. They're not the do attitudes. Put away your checklist. Read 1 Corinthians 13, not as I've got to live up to this, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. I've got to be instead. God doesn't say, this is what you need to be, now go do it or else. He says, this is who I say you are. This is the label I put on you. Be. Be. You know, as I'm standing here, I'm thinking today, you know, I led the pre-service prayer at 10:30. I helped lead the dedication. I helped lead the announcements. And now I'm preaching. I'm thinking, there's so much I've got to do in my mind. There's so much I've got to do. I've got to try and be a great preacher. I've got to try and be a great person who prays. I've got to try and be all this, this, that, and the other. And God says, whoa, take a moment. Pause. Don't spend so much effort trying to be, to do something that you're not. Just be my child. Be my son. Be my daughter. You don't have to be a preacher who will be great all the time, because preachers aren't great all the time. But God says, I want you to be a son, a daughter, who will be great all the time, because you are a fantastic son, a fantastic daughter. Yeah, we only have to look at what's been going on this morning. This beautiful baby girl, she hasn't done anything. She hasn't been reading through the Bible and praying morning and evening and working hard and this, that, and the other. She just is. And so much love is showered on her. She hasn't done anything. She's just resting, knowing that she is loved. And the only thing that she has to do is to know who she is and receive that love. She doesn't have to do. And that's what we want it to be like in our relationships as well. So in all of this, how do we be who God says we have to be? How do we be love in our world? How do we be love in our relationships, in our work, in our friendships? You know, when I think of this, I think of Daniel. You've got to picture the scene. You know, Jerusalem has just been attacked. Everyone has been exiled, taken out of their context into a new culture, into a foreign culture, into a new environment. They don't speak the language. They don't know what's going on. God seems a million miles away. Now, some of the Israelites at the time, they rebelled or withdrew. They completely shut themselves out from Babylon, the people who had exiled them, and say, I'm having nothing to do with that. Some people went the other way and they said, okay, we're in Babylon now. This is just who we are. They took on the culture. They forgot God. They lost their identity. And you might think that those are the only two options. But Daniel and his friends do something completely different. They walk a third way in the middle. Because Daniel and his friends had a royal education, they got sent to work in the king's palace, the king of Babylon. You think, working for the enemy? That's compromise, surely. Or maybe they could gain his trust, take him out from within. But no, Daniel and his friends walk a third way. They listen to what the prophet Jeremiah said. Pray for your city. Build houses. Build communities. Grow families. This is where you are now, but I haven't left you. And Daniel says, okay. He takes on a Babylonian name. He dresses in Babylonian clothes. But then you read on, and there are significant, significant moments where he draws the line, where he says, I'm not bowing down to that idol. I'm not doing this that would dishonor my God. And it's that third way, that combination of laying down your life and serving others. It's that third way that we need to see love in action in our relationships. So there are two parts to love. There are two things we got to be. Part one isn't always the most comfortable, but there is good news in part two. There are two parts to love. Part one is all about dying, unfortunately, as we lay down our lives, as we lay down ourselves. But then part two is being raised to new life again. Now, I said me and Rachel are going to do some tag team preaching. I'm going to give her the uncomfortable part. But as we hear about this, as we hear about the two parts to love, how we can love each other, how we can be love, how we can serve each other, we've got to lay down ourselves. We've got to lay down our own lives. But then we take up new life in Jesus as well. So I'll hand over to Rachel for part one.
So we were actually discussing this in Wetherspoons, and I was thinking, so what is the key in all of my relationships? What's the key in my relationship with God, my relationship with people, and what have I learned in the last few years? And I think it's one word, dying. So I don't mean physically dying. I mean literally dying to myself, dying to that stuff that wants to cause arguments, that stuff that wants to be independent and wants things my own way, that stuff that that wants to be proud. It's literally dying. I'm going to explain that a little bit more in a minute. In Luke 9:23, it says, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily and follow me. And that's Jesus saying, if anyone wants to come after me, let him actually deny his like selfish desires. Let him daily die. So Jesus died on a cross, and it's saying literally daily dying to that stuff that causes arguments, that stuff where you almost want to push people down because you're ambitious, that stuff that gets in the way. And each of us, it's different stuff, but there's stuff, and it's a daily dying. And I think there's actually two parts to this. The first part is the fact that Jesus is number one in our lives. Jesus is number one over everything. So no relationship, no work, job, no nothing can take the place of Jesus. We're actually daily denying ourselves in that way. And through that, we become closer together. Through that, we actually have a closer marriage because we daily deny ourselves for Jesus. We daily pick up our cross for Jesus so we can become closer to each other. And 7 years ago, it was amazing. Chris actually taught me this. Chris showed me just a picture of how this works, and I'm actually going to get him to explain it to you now because it's actually an amazing picture.
Okay. Quick demonstration. Back when I was 16, I was thinking, right, I've really got to get a girlfriend because my younger brother, 3 years younger than me, he'd already gotten a girlfriend. I thought, that's not right. I'm the older brother, surely. But my youth leader took me on a journey with that. And he told me how the only way that you can be closer to your friends, to your spouse, is to get close to God. Now, that doesn't seem to make too much sense, but if we put it this way, imagine this is God. This is me. This is Rachel. Now, God has already done everything he can for us. Jesus came to earth, became a human, died on a cross, rose again. God has done everything. He is as close as he possibly can be. The rest is up to us. Now, if I'm thinking, I want a fantastic marriage with Rachel, I could get closer to her like this. But we're getting no closer to God. If Rachel wants to get closer to God, but I refuse, she's just getting further and further and further away. But if we both choose above each other to both focus on God, what happens automatically at the same time? This is why Jesus is number one in our relationship.
And that's a key, I'd say. It's been a key for the last 7 years, first hearing that demonstration, to actually know that when I go closer to God, and if Chris is going closer to God, then we're actually both getting closer together. And I can tell you that's a true picture. And I mean, even if you are married to an unbeliever or you have maybe an unbelieving boss, or you have family that are unbelievers, I can actually tell you as well, as you draw closer to God, something does happen, and they can see God's heart in you. And it takes time, but I believe God can impact that and God can move in that. But the second point I want to make is this picture of marriage in the Bible. So in the Bible, you see throughout that Jesus and the church, Jesus is the husband, the church is his bride. You see in the Old Testament how God married the people of Israel, God married the Jewish people, and you see his heart for them. You see his heart in Hosea when his bride, his wife, runs away from him and worships other idols and worships other gods, and God just wants his bride back. And you see this idea of marriage. In Revelation 19, you see the marriage of the Lamb, which is where Jesus, as the husband, will marry the church as the bride. So we're all part of the bride of Christ. And Jesus laid down everything. Jesus was crucified. Jesus was on the cross for his bride. But in that verse, in Luke 9:23, it says that we actually, as the bride of Christ, need to deny ourselves and daily pick up our cross and follow him. So it's this idea of literally mutually dying to yourself in marriage. It's dying to those selfish things that drive you in different directions and drive you away from God. It's a relationship. It's not a rule book. Denying yourself and picking up your cross and following Jesus, it's a really painful process. And it can be a really painful process within a relationship. And I can tell you there has been arguments. I can tell you actually in our relationship, sometimes you have a more extroverted character. Sometimes you have a more introverted character. And I mean, Chris is very content reading books. Chris is very content in that environment and learning more and all that sort of stuff. I'm, on the other hand, not like that. I'm the person that wants to move forward, wants to do things, is a bit more emotional. And actually, that takes more of a dying to myself. Actually, I have to put those things down and actually serve and actually not fly off the handle and not just do what I want to do all the time, not be that independent character. And it's taken me a lot more dying probably than Chris, because Chris's personality, just we have a personality difference in that way. But I can tell you it's worth it. It's worth it in a marriage to literally crucify yourself. Paul says in Galatians 2:20, I've been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. in every situation, every relationship, whether it's in a family relationship, whether it's a work relationship, whether it's a marriage relationship, we're on the process to be crucified with Christ. In the Bible, it talks about this idea of the flesh, which is the flesh leading you in another direction. So it's basically our selfishness leading us in another direction. But we literally need to crucify the flesh. We need to crucify ourselves so that we are dead with Christ, but then we are alive again, and it's much better. Our new life, and Chris is going to talk about the new life. It's much better. It's free. It's free from guilt. It's free from shame. It's free from fear. Free from condemnation, that we rise again. But it takes a process of dying. So we literally need to let the flesh go. And that's for everyone. That's for men, women, children, bosses, subordinates. That's literally for everyone. And I'm going to just quote a little bit from what Paul says in Ephesians. So a husband and wife having to submit to each other. If you've been married, that's literally crucifying your flesh. A wife submitting to her husband. I mean, if you've been married, that is crucifying your flesh. A husband laying down your life for your wife as Christ did for the church, that's actually crucifying your flesh. It talks in Ephesians 6 about slaves and masters and slaves submitting to your masters. That's actually crucifying your flesh, even if you were wrongly a slave and there was injustice in it. I mean, children obeying their parents, for many, again, that's actually crucifying the flesh. It's all about changing your heart. And changing to be more like Jesus and being Jesus in your marriage. And I found actually when I focus so much on the practicalities rather than my heart and not checked my heart, I turn into this monster where I go, why haven't you done the car? Why are you sitting around being lazy? Why are you not laying down your life for me? I'm doing all this, you're doing that, you're not doing anything. And that's not Paul's heart in this. That's not what Paul's saying. And Chris just looks at me and goes, Martha, Martha, which if you know, he says that, which if you know the story in the Bible of Mary and Martha. So basically in the biblical times, women couldn't sit with a rabbi and they had to be in the kitchen and they had to be serving. And Mary chose to sit at Jesus' feet instead of do all the serving and do all the stuff. And Martha storms in and says, shouldn't she be helping me? Shouldn't she be doing this? And Jesus just goes, Martha, Martha. And I find actually when we do, instead of focusing on the heart transformation, when we focus on just, you haven't done that, you haven't done your role, you haven't done that practical thing, you haven't done that practical thing, and I think it can work either way, and I've seen it work both ways, then we lose this heart transformation, the heart transformation of actually crucifying your flesh in marriage, the heart transformation of crucifying your flesh in your workplace, in your job. I mean, when you submit to a leader, when you submit to leadership, even in your workplace, because it talks about, I think the passage about slaves and masters, it talks, there's a charge to masters and a charge to slaves, and it talks about how actually, I guess you could apply this to a workplace. We actually have to submit to leadership because we show Jesus's heart in our workplace, and it's really crucifying the flesh, particularly if you don't like your boss. And then it talks about masters, how they need to be good to their servants. And it talks basically in this passage how leaders need to treat people well, and then people need to submit to leadership. And Paul's basically showing how we should show ourselves to the world. How do we do relationships? How do we show Jesus to the world? We show it by getting this stuff right, by not going off on one, by actually being Jesus and being the servant in our relationships. And that's for everyone. That is literally for everyone, every man, every woman, every child. It's to serve. The heart of it is not, oh, you haven't done this tradition, you haven't done that role. It's not about that. It's about showing the light of Jesus to the world through getting this stuff right. It's about when you're in a workplace environment, if everyone's kind of gossiping about the boss and gossiping about the manager, it's about not doing that and actually saying, I'm going to follow what this person says because they're my boss, because I'm being Jesus in that environment. So it's not about roles and traditions. It's about living for God in a different way, coming in with a different spirit. It's not about living selfishly anymore. And I'm just going to list the stuff in Galatians 5 it talks about, which I guess is the flesh, what I was talking about earlier. It's not about living with idolatry, sorcery, hostility, quarreling, jealousy, outbursts of anger, selfish ambition, dissension, division, envy, drunkenness, and wild parties. But then it talks about the fruit of the Spirit, and this is for everyone. It's about living out of love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. You know, God doesn't look whether you get the traditions right, whether you've done the car enough, whether you've cooked the meal right, or he looks at your heart and your heart in all of this and your heart in a relationship. In 1 Samuel 16:7, it says, "But the Lord said to Samuel, 'Do not look at his appearance or at his physical stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord does not see as a man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart.'" I mean, what's the heart of someone that can literally say, "I can follow leadership. I can follow what leadership say"? What's the heart of someone who treats their workers in a good way? Who treats people who they have leadership over in a good way? And that's what I believe we need to show in all of our relationships, whether it's a marriage relationship, a family relationship. It talks about in the family relationships, like children obey your parents, but fathers don't exasperate your children. Paul is saying about how in leadership, like, you need to lead well without dominating people. But he's also talking about, actually, if you're not in leadership, you then indeed need to come under and submit to that leadership. He's talking in Ephesians 5 and 6 about that. And this applies to all relationships. And it's a freedom in it. I don't want to say, have I done enough in life? Have I got, like, the religious practice right? Have I just done my section right? I want to say, how can I be more like Jesus every day in my relationships? How can God crucify my flesh more daily so that I can have new life in him, so that I can literally look more like Jesus, more in my marriage, more in my family life, more in me? How can I do that rather than, and I think it's almost like a shift in the way we think, because I think a lot of teaching's gone into how can you get your role right instead of how can you be more like Jesus in this situation? How can you honor more? How can you love more? And there was a situation just recently with my job and with things that we actually didn't agree on. And I knew eventually it would be the right thing, what I wanted to make, the decision I wanted to make. But we went on a journey together. I didn't just go out and make the decision straight away. As soon as I was like, oh, I have a conviction from the Holy Spirit, I'm just going to do it. We actually had conversations about it. And it's about how do I honor and how do I respect more? How can I be Jesus in this situation rather than am I right? Am I wrong? Have I got the rules right? And I just want to leave you with that thought. And that's the key in my relationship. The key is literally dying. The dying to myself and letting God change my heart from the inside out, because it's a heart change, not an outward appearance change. So I'm going to let Chris talk about having new life.
So if we just leave it there, if we just leave it as relationships is all about dying, it's a bit doom and gloom. Thankfully, there's a second part to it. Now, like Rachel was saying, half of love, half of relationships, it is laying down your own life. It is dying to yourself. It is laying down your preferences. But that can't be the only thing that we do. We need people to understand us. We want to be understood and honored and loved and trusted. Sometimes we've got to put that aside for the sake of an argument, for the sake of loving someone else and supporting them. But then, as we lay down our old lives, here's the good news. Jesus gives us a new one. As we die to ourselves, Jesus puts his life in us instead. As you put off the old self, put on the new self. Like Rachel was saying, we've had arguments before. We've been dealing with this, that, and the other. And we come to a point where we realize, okay, how can we make sure that we're both laying ourselves down and pushing forward to the new life that God has for us. Sometimes that's meant that Rachel has to come to conversations just a little bit calmer. Sometimes that means that I have to come to conversations and open up and actually be expressive and let my emotions out, heaven forbid. But all of this is about laying ourselves down so that God can put his new life in us. Here's the deal. You can't fix your flesh. You can't fix your old self. It's dead. It's gone. Lay it down. The good news is Jesus comes and he puts his new life in you instead. You know, when I think about how I've died to myself in my relationship with Rachel, I don't get stuck in a rut of thinking it's all about her, it's never about me. What I know is that I have an amazing wife who does the same thing. And Jesus puts his new life in us. And as I lay my life down, that's a hard part sometimes. But as Jesus puts his new life in me, I serve her. I love her. I put my weight behind her. And that is the joyful part. Lay down your life, but then take up the new life to serve, to honor, to respect, to give, to support. I mean, I said before, I've got a little notebook that I call my Rachel PhD, where over the years, I've just written things. Half of it is laying down my life to meet her needs and preferences. And the other half is, how can I support her? How can I love her? I've got things written in there that don't have big in-depth discussions last thing at night. She is not a night person. And that's something I've had to learn over time. I lay down my preference and I realize, okay, maybe I have to get up a bit earlier in the morning. I am not a morning person. But I lay down myself and I serve Rachel. And I find that conversations at 8 in the morning as we start the day together, physically I'm tired, but in here I'm on fire, I'm joyful because I have laid down my life, but I've taken up new life and serving alongside her instead. Like I said last week, love is not self-seeking. Love does not insist on its own way. And having a good relationship, it's not about what you can get out of it, but how you can use what you have and who you are to build the other person up instead. And as you go on that heart transformation, you see this in everything, in relationships, marriages, friendships, work. You become a person where you realize it's not all about me. And I willingly, happily, habitually lay my life down so that I can receive new life to serve others. And the weirdest things become joyful. Richard turns up at 10 a.m. to set up the chairs that you're all sitting on. Otherwise, we'd all be standing. He's done it week in, week out. He loves it. Now, I don't know many people who love setting up chairs, but here he is. Why? Because he's laid down his own life. He's laid down his preferences. He's laid down the fact that he's going to have to come here an hour early, and he serves, and he loves it, and he's joyful, and he's always got a smile on his face, and I love it. Use what you have to build up the other person. I once heard someone say, look for the gold in people. Look for the gold in people. As we lay down ourselves, we lay down our own perspectives if need be. We lay down our need to be right, our way of doing things, our way of seeing the world. And we have empathy and we see things from the other person's perspective. We look for the gold in the other person. What does that look like? It looks like prophesying truth and destiny over the other person. Like I said last week, I was talking about Rachel, how she is a leader in and of herself. She is a leader that is going to change the world. What am I doing? I'm reading the word and I'm speaking it over somebody else. I'm prophesying truth and destiny. I'm looking for the gold in her. Use your influence to bring people and places, bring them to people and places that can advance them. I once heard someone say there's a second half to it. Look for the gold in people, but don't try and squeeze it out of them. Go on a journey with people. I know what Rachel has in her spirit. I know the destiny that is on her life. I know she's going to shake the world and nothing can stop that. But when she's got a problem with something happening at work, I can't use the excuse of looking for gold to try and immediately dive in and solve her problems. Like, come on, stand up, Rachel. It's like, Chris, I just need to talk. I'm looking for the gold, but I'm not trying to squeeze it out of her. Go on a journey with people Look for the gold in them. You know, in all of this, Jesus sums it up pretty well in Mark 10, verses 42 to 45. The disciples are having an argument. They've gotten to the stage where, okay, they've laid down their lives. They've realized, okay, this Jesus guy, he's dangerous, but we want what he's got. We want to follow him. They've laid down everything. They've given up their jobs. They've left behind their families. They've given up everything, everything to follow him. They've laid down their lives, but they haven't quite gotten this part two yet of serving instead. In Mark 10, 42 to 45, it says, leaders shouldn't lord it over people. Leaders should not lord over people. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man, even Jesus, even the King of Kings, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. As we're leading people in relationships, as we're leading people in friendships, in church, in everything, in work, it's not about being the boss. It's not about having the title or the position. But it's always being on the lookout for ways to serve. Always being on the lookout for people to say, hey, how's it going? Can I bless you? Can I chat with you? Do you need a hug? Do you want a coffee? How can I help you out? Oh, you need a piano moving down the stairs. I'll be there. Whatever it is, leading people, loving people, serving people, it's not about who you are, your title, your position, being the boss. But it's always being on the lookout to serve the other person, to build them up. You know, there are people in this room, me and Rachel included, we turn up at 8:30, we load and we unload the van. There's midweek work, sending out the emails. The band are preparing on Wednesdays with their practice. There's prayer meeting. We're chatting with people over coffee. What are we doing? We're laying down our lives, yes. But we are taking up the new life that God has for us, saying, I want to serve. I want to be the leader by serving. I want to show my leadership by investing in you. I want to love you and serve you that way. Now, don't get me wrong. This doesn't mean being a doormat and saying yes to everything. That's going too far the other way. Self-denial, laying down your life, is not the same as self-neglect. Don't get me wrong there. But it is about having an other-focused mindset. We honor. We want to honor you guys here by having some amazing hospitality that we'll have pretty soon, by having fantastic coffee, by having great music, by having musicians and singers that practice and do really well and work so hard and hone their craft, by giving out chocolate to new visitors, by having people at the door that say hi. What are we doing? We are serving. We are investing. We are loving people. Just like Daniel did. This king of Babylon who'd come in, destroyed his city, killed his family and friends, taken him away to a foreign country where he didn't speak the language, knew nothing. You think if anyone had the right to say, give me a break, it would have been him. But what did Daniel do? He laid down his preferences. He laid down his life even. And then he took up the new life that God had given him to serve, to love, to be a blessing. Loving people is not about compromise. Sometimes we have to stand up for what we know is right. We can't be a doormat to a boss who's trying to force you to do things that you know are not right. We can't be a doormat to a spouse who's trying to lord it over you or manipulate you. We can't be a doormat to a friend who's trying to steal all of your time and give nothing in return. We stand up for our principles. We stand up for what is right. But how do we do that? By laying ourselves down and serving instead. by going on a journey with people, by loving people. This week, this year, I want you to walk the way of the exile like Daniel did. I want you to walk the line between rebelling and withdrawing and insisting on your own way and between compromising, just giving in, just being a doormat. Walk the middle ground of saying, yes, I can lay my life down. I can lay my preferences down. And I can take up the new life that God has given me to serve, to honor, to bless. Don't get hung up on negotiables. You know, far too often in churches, in the Christian world, we try and hide away from this sinful world, this evil world. We post things on Facebook about how terrible this person and that person is. And we think that we're standing up for what's right. But let's not get hung up on that. Dive into your world. Dive into your marriage, your friendships, your community, your workplace. Understand your environment. We've got to stand up to meet our principles. We've got to critique immorality and injustice and oppression wherever we find it. We believe in a God of justice and truth, but we also believe in a servant king of mercy and love. Stand up by laying yourself down. Love by serving.